You are listening to Voices of Youth in Care, a four-part series about the child welfare system, created by survivors of the system. To conclude our series, we issue a challenge. This is our Manifesto for Change. In it, you will hear the voices of many young people speaking out about living in the system. They tell us what works and what doesn't. These young people are the true experts. Their ideas and wisdom must direct the policy and law that affect children in care. This is Voices of Youth in Care with our Manifesto for Change.
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 I shall
not be moved.
I shall not be moved. What you are about to hear is a collection of personal stories from young people in the system, survivors of the system, and child advocates about what is wrong with the system. We speak, but no one listens.
I don't feel that my voice is being heard. All I needed was them to listen to what I had to say, and they weren't listening.
They don't listen to you. You like, say they're going to send you away to somewhere else. They'll ask you what you want, but they won't listen to you. It's not going to make a difference what you tell them.
They don't listen to me at all.
I didn't voice my opinion much, but when I did, I wasn't really listened to.
I was judged. A lot of times I was scared and nobody really saw that. I wanted to be listened to and I was just ignored.
No one listened to my opinion when I wanted them to hear. They like ignored me like I was like some stupid thing.
We arrive in the system as refugees and we become prisoners. One woman who grew up in the system spoke to us about being gang raped as a teenager. Child welfare services should have provided a refuge. She describes a prison.
Being raped, being put away in a lockup within a cell that was no bigger than this room. I was treated like an animal because I was raped, because I knew who the people were who did this to me. And the only way that I would keep my mouth shut was that I was placed in a cell. And they told me that if I would drop it, that I wouldn't look so bad. Because they would turn around and say that I was offered money for my services.
We turn into crossover kids. We come in for protection and end up in detention.
I was a victim of sexual abuse, and I was locked up in a prison, basically, and I was stuck with all these criminals, and I felt like I had to measure up to them. I wasn't a criminal at the time. It made me more aware of criminal activity, and I did start doing some pretty bad things. I wanted to be like my peers. I didn't want to be the oddball. I didn't want to be the only one in there because I was just a victim of sexual abuse, you know. I wanted to be just as bad as them. Otherwise, I would have gotten beaten up or, you know, I would have been the outcast, and I didn't want that. I wasn't a criminal when I went in there. I felt like I had to be a criminal in order to survive.
Judy Finley is Ontario's chief child advocate. She has been fighting for the rights of children in care for more than two decades.
What we're seeing in Ontario, which is a really, really important piece, is what I call crossover kids. So we're bringing kids who've been traumatized into children's aid care, and then they're acting out behaviorally because they're not getting the supports or the understanding or the interventions that they require, and they're acting out behaviorally in the group care situations. Then they're being charged with criminal offenses and moved into the young offender system. There's a problem, a big problem with that. And I take a very strong position about that. And now, again, we've moved it out to the community and asked the community to hold agencies and governments accountable around this. We're bringing kids into our system. We're becoming the parent. And then as a parent, we're charging them with offenses. It's outrageous.
Behavior management is so severe, it is abusive.
Every time I used to misbehave, it used to restrain me. It wasn't very pleasant because after I was done getting restrained, I had bruises. That summer, I hurt my neck, and one of the staff placed me on the floor, and she dug her knee into my neck, and I heard a snap again in my neck. They abuse you, kind of. Not abuse you, but when they try to restrain you, they restrain you too hard. You know, I thought at one point my arm was broken. It was sprained. They sprained my arm. That's how hard they restrain you. I know when I went home for one weekend, my dad looked at my arm. I had bruises on my arms, on my back and everything because of the staff. They shouldn't do that like that. That's too rough. Honestly, me and the girls complained about it so many times to the staff, to hire people, and like they didn't do anything. They say we deserve it. I don't think we deserve getting bruises on our body. Honestly.
What did you do that...
Oh, no. One time I didn't want to take a shower because I took a shower that morning, but they didn't believe me. So they sent me to the QR, okay? And they restrained me in the QR because they were sending me lockup for no reason, you know? And I was... put this when I got there, man, I was so sore of how they used to restrain me. My arms used to hurt, or my legs or my back used to sit on me. You know, and it's not pleasant to be in these places.
Like, the most negative stuff is, like, sleeping on the floor. They'll make you sleep on the floor and, like, she wants people to know that, for them to know that if their kid is in a group home, to ask them what's happening, because, like, it's not normal for someone to sleep on the floor in the middle of the winter.
Why would they make people sleep on the floor? They didn't have enough beds, or
no? Like, I slept on the floor. I had a bed, and we had roommates. I had one roommate, and I was coughing, and they said I was making too much noise, like the staff. So they made me sleep in the hallway. They didn't want to give me pajamas. I'd sleep in my boxers in the hallway with only a blanket, no mattress, and a pillow.
We don't have access to the information about our lives and the decisions other people make about our lives. This is one thing I found especially frustrating. It's the truth. You don't have access to your information as a youth in the system. But as one woman explains, even as an adult, you're denied access. If you're lucky, though, you may get part of what you're looking for.
I filled out an application form to get my papers. About 6 months later, I got a phone call saying that they have my file. I can go pick it up. I went to go pick up my file. I brought it home. I sat down and I opened it. The first thing I remembered is, wow, there's a lot of years here. How come there's so little paper? I was assuming that I was going to get like a box full of papers. Apparently, there's supposed to be every court hearing you've ever had. There was one court of paper in there. There was two psychology reports. That's what sticks out of my mind is that. When I sat down and I was reading some of my stuff, they black out names. You can't see all kinds of stuff. Tons of stuff you can't see. All I know is that when I was looking through that thing, I was crying and freaking out. I couldn't believe some of the stuff that I was reading.
It's hard not knowing what they're going to do with your life.
Mothers in exile. Often, mothers in the system just need support. But instead, the system offers them nothing, and they lose their children.
In 2001, I was evicted from my home due to arrears in rent and because of a reduction to my social assistance. I was a single mother of two children, aged 16 months and 4 years old, and I was faced with a choice of paying the rent or feeding my children. I chose food. So we moved to Quebec with hopes of changes and cheaper rent. And 1 month and the children were placed in foster care due to poverty. The younger child was placed for adoption and the older child returned to me. And upon her returning, we moved into a homeless shelter. There were absolutely no supports or resources given to our family in order to reunite or to become housed. So that's a bit of my experience.
I allowed people to stay over at my house and
I had an appointment one night, so then when I returned back, there was bruises and markings on my son. So we went to the hospital. I signed papers for him to be placed under emergency measures, and I was trying my best to try and be positive, get a better stable apartment, and having my mom live with me because I didn't have the money to afford anything. I did not get no support from the social workers. There was lack of communication. They just thought that it was right for them to place him as long as they wanted. They didn't give me a chance to explain my true feelings.
Our cultural, religious, and ethnic identities are obliterated while we are in care.
You live your life, I guess, in a bit of confusion, you know, I guess feeling alone. I can remember always having that feeling of just being alone. So, I could say that, I grew up feeling alone and, you know, always wondering, falling in all those cracks, you know, living out those labels that were given to me and put on my back as you go through that system. And it wasn't until I actually started hanging out with some other Aboriginals where I could finally relate. You know, there's that invisible mentality that just connects us, that just brings us together, whether it's, you know, shared through the language or just through perspective. It's there, it exists, I know it does, I've experienced it. So it's like that wasn't until I came back around Aboriginal people where I finally felt, hey, you know, I've kind of started that process of, you know, going back home, let's say.
There is such a high social worker turnover rate, which forces us to tell our stories over and over and over and over.
I've had around 15 different social workers since the age of 7.
Last count. A lot. I think it was like 11, 12, 15.
Approximately 18, but an exact number I can't give you, I don't remember.
When I started having social workers come into my life, there was so many of them. It was one after the other. Every time I ran away or every time I did something bad, it was like I had a new social worker. Telling your story over and over again, you wind up leaving out important parts of it because you don't want to have to retell it over again. You sort of become, you know, unattached to your story. You have to relive all those terrible things that happened to you, and it's really hard. And the social workers who are interviewing you sort of see that, and they write that in their book, and they say, oh, well, so-and-so is not emotionally detached from her story and doesn't want help.
It's hard. It's hard to have so many people in and out of your life, and all you want to do is just have that one person to hold you and comfort you and support you and encourage you to do what's right.
The fear of intervention keeps us silent.
Me now, like, I know not to, like, tell people, like, what's happening at home and all that, because if I do, I'm going to get, like, taken out and, like, because, like, I used to talk at my camp to people, like, counselors and all that, and tell them that, that my dad used to beat me and all that, and that I wasn't comfortable staying home, so then, like, they get me, like, they talk to people, and then I wouldn't be able to stay with my parents. And so what I've learned from is that if I talk about it, like, something's going to happen. And, like, just, like, if, like, my dad blows up or something, just, like, get away. And, like not just, like, try my hardest not to get, like, put in a, like, different home. Like, it's, like, you can't, like, now I can't really trust anybody most of the time about talking about my family. Like, they ask me about my family, and I'm, like, oh, I'm not allowed talking about my family because I don't talk about it. Because, like, I get into a lot of trouble. And then I don't like seeing my mom sad. Like, when I was getting put to a different home, my mom was crying. And she was like, oh, look, our family's going to be split up because of you. And I felt bad. And, like, I don't want to, like, disappoint my parents and all that.
We are denied the thinking and language tools that allow us to stand up for ourselves or even understand that we deserve better.
One of the things that was striking... Well, I went into the school hoping that kids who were in the system were going to talk about their experiences in the system in a really angry and critical way, and that they were going to have a sense of the injustice that had happened to them. But what we discovered in speaking to these kids is that they started to believe in the system as it was, and they sort of believed what everyone was telling them. What was upsetting is they didn't see themselves as oppressed, and we really felt they were being mistreated. So two sort of things happened. One, they just didn't have the language to express how hard it was being in the system. So they'd say things like, it was boring. And we talked about it as a team and said, you know, what does boring mean? Does boring mean you didn't have anything to do, or does boring mean you were locked up in an isolation room for 6 hours? Does boring mean you have no one to talk to and you feel completely lonely and isolated and alienated? So they just didn't have the language. We felt like there was more behind the language they were using, and they couldn't pinpoint the injustices.
So tell me about being in the system.
It's kind of boring.
Boring as hell.
Boring?
Very boring.
It was boring.
What was boring about it?
It was just boring. It was boring. Being there was boring. There was nothing to do ever, really. Not much to do.
Basically, it's nothing that's really hard in the system. You only make it hard for yourself if you choose it to be hard. I was a delinquent. I've been into 3 foster homes and did not work out at all because I sabotaged it.
I don't see why you have to be bad for when it doesn't get you anywhere. I find if you're good, you get places faster than if you're bad, because if you're bad, you're going to be locked up for the rest of your life, you know? And if you have an older sister and older brother doing the same thing, do not follow them. Be yourself. Do not do what they did, because that's how I ended up in this predicament.
And the other thing is that they completely absorbed the rhetoric and jargon of the system. So they ended up speaking like they were these brainwashed mouthpieces. And using this rhetoric of choice, like if you make the right choice, you can make the right choice. You know, when in fact, when you're in the system, you have so little opportunity to make your own choice.
Each and every kid is in there for a reason. It's either daily by learning by the easy way or by the hard way. If you want to choose by the easy way, going down the right path, you know, not getting in trouble and everything else, but that's fine. But for me, I went down the hard path.
You can always change, but you have to want to change. Mm-hmm.
Basically, if you're going to be there, just listen to it, because if you don't, then there's going to be severe consequences behind it.
If you want help, you'll get it. You just have to ask.
And try your best. I mean, if you go to a lockup unit, don't act stupid. Like, try your best to behave.
Just be real on your best behavior. The best behavior that you're on, the faster you can get out.
The system failed to protect us from abuse.
The system took me away from my abusive home and placed me in a home where I continued to get abused. Until eventually I was sent back to my original home, where I was abused again.
Survival of the fittest. Here's how we've worked the system and tried to survive.
Be passive.
Yeah, be passive. Either tell them everything and let them help you, or don't tell them anything. Because everything they use against you, they write it down in logbooks. It ends up in court reports. It ends up in psychology reports. It ends up in intervention plans, and all kinds of different things.
I'll say, once you're there, respect the rules, because you get out sooner than you think.
You may think that you're leading the perfect life, and all of a sudden something happens, and a social worker pops out of nowhere and ruins everything, and you're not ready for that. It can happen to anybody. So just be prepared for anything. Don't think that your life is all roses and candies, you know. It's not.
I don't actually like trust staff a lot, because whatever you say to them, they tell each and every other staff. So you can't tell them anything. The only person or the people you could trust is yourself there. That's all you could trust there.
Here are some of the things that must change.
Well, first of all, I would have more social workers. Social workers' caseloads wouldn't be so big. They'd have more time to spend individually with their clients. I would have more programs for the kids, more activities for them to do during the day or after school or on weekends or on holidays, because often that's when I would get myself into trouble when I had nothing to do. There's just not enough money right now for anything the kids want to do in the system. I don't know. I think if I was working with kids in the system as a staff, I would I try not to judge them the way I was judged and treated. I treat them with respect and as human beings, because often kids are just treated as numbers or just another kid in the system.
Children should be looked at more carefully. I think that the staff should be able to have more of a bond with the children, because these children don't have anyone and they deserve to be loved like everyone else.
I know it's really hard to find foster families, but if they could just make more investigations, more support for the families and more support for the kids, and just supervise that more. And I think if the social workers have less cases, just to balance, because I wish that my social worker was there more. I had a hard time communicating with her. I was just seeing her, like, I don't know, 4 times a year, but that's not enough.
Support the staff get, support the kids get, the stability of one placement instead of 22.
There is a lot of corruption going on, and a lot of children aren't being treated fairly. Children's Advocate is not being advertised enough to the youth in the protection system, and I feel that it should be.
There has to be a huge community ownership of all our children, and we need to start respecting them in a different kind of way. But I'm seeing slight movement in that direction, but we have a long way to go.
I shall not be moved. I shall not be moved. I shall not be moved. Not be moved.